This is the July 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Michael Gordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from First Choice Commodities from Watseka, Illinois, Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Joe Vaklevic at Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org or look us up in your favorite podcast application. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I think, Merrill Crowley, I'll start with you. What's on your list of things that you want to take up for the day?
Corn loads, have they already occurred or are they still to come? Then the insurance average versus that fall low and how that works and what you might think about doing for marketing, U.S.-China relations, and the U.S. dollar.
Chip Nellinger, he brought us through a bunch of stuff. Anything else you want to take up?
Wow, that was an extensive list. You know, I'd say the weather in August, you know, the fund links in beans, and I think probably that could be an all-inclusive list that Merrill just gave us right there.
You betcha. Anything else, Joe Vaklevic or Michael Cordonier?
Yeah, we are in the process of pricing in a record corn crop. I guess my question, and this would actually be a question for everybody, how soon do we price in this record corn crop? Because it seems like it's awfully early, and it seems like we've got a pretty good indication that this thing's going to be a monster. This seems like a year to me that you may price this thing in and discount it very, very quickly or very early, maybe more so than in a typical year. And I'd be interested in hearing what everybody has to think about that.
Michael, do you have anything to add to the list of items we should take up?
That was a pretty good list, I think. So I'll start off with the condition of the crop and my yield estimates and that sort of thing.
Well, let's do that then. Why don't you go ahead and take that up, because I know you released that recently.
Yes. Well, the big news this week, of course, was the big increase in the good to excellent condition ratings. 3% increase for both. Put both corn and soybeans at 72% good to excellent. They're better than average, of course. And to show you how big of an increase that was, if you go back about 25 years, for the corn to go up, it only went up one time, 5%, good to excellent. That was back in 2021 when you compare this week in July. It went up one time, 2%. That was 1998. So it almost always goes up 1%. And then for soybeans, if you go way back, it went up 5% this week in 2001, and then twice it did 3% increase, 1998 and 1995. So a 3% increase is a big, big increase. Now, I did increase my corn yield 1.5 bushels. I'm 178.5 with a higher bias. I increased my soybeans 1 bushel to 51, also with a higher bias. You know, I think the trend this summer has been the actual weather has not been nearly as threatening as the forecast. You know, we had a couple of threats of these big domes coming in. They never lasted very long. The temperatures broke. Rain came through. And right now, I would say maybe a week ago, I thought 85% of the crops are doing good, 15% need a rain. Now I would say maybe 90% doing good and 10% needing rain. And the two areas that still need moisture, west central Iowa, sort of straight west of Des Moines, and then most of Ohio, eastern Indiana, and a little bit of Michigan. But those eastern areas might get rain anytime soon. So the crops are on an increase. We still got August to go, so we're not home yet, but they're going into August in good condition. I think the weather is very benign. It's getting cooler, so daytime highs, not nearly as high as before. Here in Chicago, we've had 21 days, 90 degrees. But you go out for the next 2 weeks, there's no 90 degrees for the next 2 weeks. So temperatures are going to cool off. You can live with lesser amount of rain if the timing is right and the temperatures are cooler. So I think we're on an upward swing here for both crops. And what's the limit? I don't know. But we could easily go above 180 for corn. I'm not there yet, but give me another week or two with slow filling of the grain and no extreme heat or extreme dryness, and we're going to do pretty darn good, I think, before it's all said and done.
Merrill Crowley, you have a question for Michael Cordonnier?
Kind of a two-parter, and I'm going to ask it in two separate parts, if you don't mind. So you're saying 178.5 and you're higher biased. What are you thinking about the 182s? And I think we even had a 188 guess out there today.
Well, 188? Wow, I don't know about that. I would give a 182 or 183. I'd give that maybe a 15, 20% probability right now. I'd have to see some rain in August, of course, so you can't quite be confident about that yet. But it wouldn't take much rain to get us there. And like I said, you know, if you had 3/4 of an inch timed out a couple times during August, that would get you there. Or if you have one good rain over the next week or so, that would probably get you there. So we're getting pretty close to being done.
And the second part is, do you find the USDA crop ratings helpful, or do you use a different approach? I mean, we've been seeing these crop ratings jump all over the board, and it's somewhat confusing trying to follow them. So I was curious if you could give us a rough idea of how you do come up with your yields without, of course, giving away your private, you know,
Well, of course, the crop conditions are one tool everybody uses, and I agree 100%. They surprised us all over the place. They went up, we thought they'd go down, they go down, we thought they'd go up. So it's been really hard this year. And I think, this is my own conspiracy theory, I think there may be maybe a lack of personnel that's doing these crop ratings. And just think about it. If in some of the bad areas, if a guy was missing or a couple guys were missing and they didn't turn in their reports, so to speak, you could skew things to the upside. Likewise, if you had a couple people show up in the good areas, it could also skew it one way or the other. So I'm really sort of skeptical about these crop ratings, especially this year. And along that same vein, you know, for the August crop report, USDA is not going to send people out in the field. So that has me worried. They did that last year. They said it's the same money, so they're not going to do it this year again. So we won't have anybody from USDA in the field until the September crop report. So, and by that time, the way this crop is going, it'll be done by then. So I am concerned about this jumping around at the crop conditions. I use that. I also use a 20-year history of soil moisture and combine that with, you know, personal observations and lots of other things to try to give a educated guess. And that's exactly what it is, an educated guess.
So I have a couple of things I'll add here because I usually land on the side of USDA. And I've been thinking a little bit about the crop report rating. And I don't recall, because I was traveling this week. Merrill, did corn in Illinois jump 11% week over week?
Yes.
Is that right? I think, yeah. So I was thinking about what that meant and about the ratings. So this week to last week, the idea that corn looked 11% better is not very far off, or far-fetched, I don't think, given rainfall and heat and rolling on the day, probably, that they took a look at it the week before and what it looks like this week. I think that's probably right. And on the August report, I wondered, Dr. Cordonnier, about this one. And as I drove across Iowa this week, the west central part of Iowa, I was thinking to myself, USDA is going to rely heavily on farmer surveys. And what I see in the field and what I saw from the road were two different things entirely.
That's always a risk. That's a big risk.
What I saw was a bad crop from the road, but a pretty good crop in the field.
Yeah, that's why you got to get out and look. And they're just going to rely on, you know, models and satellites and all that sort of thing for the August crop report has me concerned. Will they overrate or underrate? I don't know which way it might go, but certainly I would like to see people out in the field instead of sitting in Washington.
Tip Nellinger, you have a question for Michael, please?
Yeah, I'd follow up on the bean side of the equation. Obviously, we know beans are made in August with rains, but assuming we do get a couple of those nice rains in August, 3/4 of an inch or an inch, what's your upside potential that you think we could get to as far as a national average bean yield?
Well, I did raise mine one bushel to 51, and my upper limit as of this week is 52, but in my heart of hearts, if this thing goes as good as what it looks for the next 2 weeks, I could go to 53. Above that, there's probably going to be some people, you know, even go above that, but I'd be hesitant at the time being. But certainly, I got a higher bias. So I think we're going to go higher.
Joe Vaklovic, a question, please.
What's your take on the forthcoming South American growing season? It appears as if soybean acreage is going to be record high. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, very good question. In fact, I've been doing a lot of work on that the last week or so. And I have the soybean area in Brazil going up, of course. They had an unbelievably good year. It's just like record yields, record profits. And when I calculated the profit, I had to do it twice to make sure I had it right. It's like they can make $3 a bushel profit on soybeans in Brazil this coming year. And you can thank the 30% devaluation of the Brazilian currency since the first of the year. Now, they have sold almost everything from last crop. They've forward contracted upwards of 50% of the next crop already at record prices. So Brazilian farmers already paid their expenses for next year. So they're going to go up. I have them going up about 4.2% in area for soybeans. I got the corn up only 2%. I think the full season corn might go down a little bit. That's the smaller of the two, and the safrinha corn going up about 4%. So the farmers have, they purchased their inputs. Most of them already have them on farm, so they're in place and ready to go. They'll start planting corn second half of August. They'll start soybeans mid-September, and they're just chomping at the bit. They just had an unbelievably good year, and they're hoping for another good one. Now, one thing that could derail Brazil, if we do get a La Nina, and it looks like we might get a mild, maybe a moderate La Nina, that generally gives you drier than normal weather in southern Brazil, at least during the planting season. Doesn't have much relationship to central Brazil, but down in Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, could be maybe a dry start. That doesn't worry me too much for soybeans. Soybean planting, very forgiving in Brazil. You can plant in September or you can plant in November or December. As long as the rest of the season is okay, doesn't make much difference. So I think soybeans go up in Brazil. Corn goes down a little bit, maybe. Kind of hard to tell. In Argentina, likewise. I think soybeans go up a little bit. Corn goes down a little bit in Argentina. And speaking of La Nina, Argentina is right now very dry. They've been dry now for a couple of months. If it stays dry into, say, August and September, they might even forego more of their corn and just wait for rain and to go to soybeans. So South America's soybean crop is going to get bigger. I got Brazil up 131 million tons, which would be, you know, an all-time record. And it's just going to be a very good year if the weather cooperates in Brazil.
So now Merrill and Chip and Joe, along with Michael, I'm wondering about the question that Merrill asked. Do you think this is close to the bottom here? And I'll start maybe Chip with you.
Let me rephrase that. Just make sure I heard you right, Todd. You're asking if I think we're near the bottom in corn prices?
Yes.
I don't. I think there's a lot of old crop left. I think if some of these numbers we're talking about in the 182, 183, 184 type of a national average yield, if they continue rain and cool weather, with the amount of old crop left, I think we're going to have a real push for storage capacity. And I don't think you've seen the lows. I'm not in the 280 camp like a lot of people were, but I think you could get awful close to $3. On the December contract before you form an ultimate low. And I'm on the alert for an early low. I don't know that that has to take till October like we normally typically see. I think maybe the market get a little ahead of itself and factor that in sooner rather than later, especially if the weather keeps cooperating. So I'd be surprised if the low is in corn. No.
Joe Vaclavic, do you think the low's in?
Just from a technical standpoint, I see this September contract has bottomed at 315 or 315 and a quarter on four different occasions now on the daily chart. You're probably going to go down and run stops below that. That being said, I think we're going to be very quick to price in this big crop. These markets are incredibly efficient, meaning that when they're presented with a piece of news or a news item, they're very, very quick to discount that news item. So I think we're going to get to a point here pretty soon where we've discounted a record crop and a record yield, and we're going to be looking to what's next. So, I also, in the same breath, I'll say that the upside is limited because there's so much grain out there. I mean, there's still old crop bushels. A lot of farmers are behind in regard to new crop pricing because the opportunity just never really presented itself to sell at a level that was even remotely profitable this year, especially since the COVID deal hit. So we may just be stuck in kind of a range-bound trade at these lower levels here, which is unfortunate. Now, there are some potential wild cards. I always try to think about, okay, what's old news and what's something that could potentially become fresh news. I think that this China stuff and all these purchases are extremely interesting. I think that that has some potential to it. I think the improvement in ethanol production has some potential to it. I think the shift in the currency markets has some potential to it, but those are all just potentially friendly items down the road. They don't really matter right now.
Merrill Crowley?
Well, depends on kind of what chart you're looking at, but I think the first thing we have to do is what causes a low, and the low is usually, or bottoms are usually caused by a panic. People finally give up, sell out. They'll sell out the old crop, they'll sell out the new crop, and I have to tend to agree that my kind of timing is in the August time period right now. With the August report, it could be like, I guess, the high water mark for what the potential would be of the crop. And when you look at the cash, we had a low on April 28th of 287. Currently, our cash is 307. If you look at the futures, we had a new low just in June 26th. Either one of them is somewhat important because going back to, say, the 70s, we've not had a cash low in April, May, or June. Now, I'm talking all-time yearly low. So with that 287 sitting there, and we had the panic from COVID, we had the cattle being backed up, we had the ethanol market dropping like a rock, so the 287 could be our low for the year. The five-year low was due May 22nd, so we're only about not even quite a month off from that. However, when you're talking about a long-term cycle low, it could still yet be coming. So my thinking is I'm watching, but I'm thinking we could have already seen the cash low. And by the way, cash is trading right now around 307 on the chart I follow. Now, I have to kind of tie this into the insurance average versus the fall low. The fall low tends to be the yearly low. So what does the market do? Well, 15 out of 20 years corn since the 2000 marketing year has had an average of a 38% higher price for the insurance average over the fall low. The soybeans, 17 out of 20 years, have had about a 76 cent higher price for the insurance average versus the fall low. And as you can see, this would come into your marketing. Even if you get a low, it would look to me like it might be a good idea to try to get some ownership on it. Depending on what your costs are, whether you're going to store in the elevator or you're going to store at home, you'd probably want to try to get some sort of call system in place to start taking advantage of a rally at that point. And you got to be real cautious about selling here because at the current December futures, I think it's 327 tonight, 330 is where the crop insurance starts to kick in 100% with the crop that you have proven for your crop insurance. I guess what I'm trying to say is you sell here, you're below crop insurance levels that are going to pay you. You've got to be cognizant of whether or not we're going to go much lower to whether or not you need to lock in some prices so you don't lose part of the government insurance payment.
Michael Cordonnier, agronomically, what do you think we need to watch for and how will it impact yield?
Okay, if you look at corn first, you know, we always worry about high nighttime temperatures and that dark respiration at night. But you know what? I think most of our 90s, well, I'm sure most of our 90s are behind us. And the corn was not filling grain, no, behind us. So now that it is filling grain, temperatures are going to cool off. That's going to make it very nice for a heavy kernel fill and heavy kernel weight. So the way it looks now, I think it's very, very advantageous for corn. And for soybeans, likewise, a cool and slow pod set and pod fill, as long as you don't have early frost, we always worry about that. But that, too, should benefit the soybeans. So I think it's just very, very positive going forward. I don't see any trouble ahead in the forecast, at least nothing worrisome. A little bit warmer than normal, but heck, that's nothing to worry about. And our temperature is actually going down now for a daily high. So even if you go 3, 4, or 5 degrees above normal going forward, it's not all that extreme. So I think our extreme weather is behind us. And then that makes a really good situation, I think, in August.
Joe Vaclavec, you wanted to talk a little bit about pricing in a record corn crop. And I know we talked about pricing, but is there a difference between today and a really record-sized corn crop?
I don't know. I don't know what's priced into the market, and that's my question. I mean, we're sitting here on a radio show at the end of July talking about how the corn yield is going to be 181, maybe it's 182, maybe it's 183. So just given the discussion that we're having here today, yeah, a good chunk of that's discounted into the marketplace already. There's no doubt about it. If we're sitting here talking about it, the big hedge funds are talking about it, then they probably were talking about it 2 weeks ago. So yeah, I think there's an argument or maybe a potential case to be made that we could post a harvest low way before harvest this year, sometime in August would be very, very possible in my opinion. I think the thing with seasonals, I stopped paying attention to seasonals when this thing had the big COVID sell-off, because when you get your biggest sell-off of the year in all likelihood in March and April, I mean, that's not seasonal. There's nothing seasonal about that. So I think that the second half of the year could very well be contra-seasonal in nature as well. You've got to go back a long ways until you had to find a year in the corn market where we had some upside in the second half of the year. 2009, 2010, 2011 were all years like that where we rallied in either August, September, October, or even later than that. So there's some precedent for it. I'm just, from these levels, you know, we're so far below the cost of production. We're below levels that are going to pay insurance. We've been talking big crop for weeks now. I think there's potentially more upside in this thing than some people would like to think.
What about for soybeans, Joe?
The bean market is in bull market territory. You pull up a bean chart, we've been trending higher since May. The funds are long the beans. Demand is fantastic. Demand for U.S. beans is twofold. It's exports, which have seen a phenomenal improvement with all these Chinese purchases. We've got the best-looking new crop export book in years. Domestic processing is basically the other half. Crush is about the other half of your demand base for U.S. beans. It's been fantastic for 2 years, I mean, since the trade war started. So you can make the argument in beans that the trend is higher. The funds are long, the sentiment is positive, and this is all despite the idea that we're going to have a huge crop. So the bean market and the corn market are really two totally different animals right now.
Chip, can beans manage to disconnect itself from corn and really rally?
Well, I agree with everything that Joe said. I'm a little more cautious, though. I'm fearful that maybe the market isn't quite thinking far enough ahead, that if it does continue to rain and cool temperatures in August, I'm not sure the market has thought about a 52, 53 bushel type crop. I know demand's been good. A lot of that's front-loaded by China for new crop. Will they take it? We got to understand we came into this thing with a 400 million bushel higher demand than a year ago. So you've got a high bar there. My fear is a big crop, record crop. We eventually either A, don't see China take all those beans, or B, they don't. We don't live up to that 400 million plus bushel increase in demand year over year, and that adds a lot to the bottom line. Funds are long. I think of anything right now, beans have the most downside potential, but I can't dispute anything Joe said. They're in an uptrend. The funds are long. They want to buy the breaks. We had a good performance today. Had every reason in the world to tank beans, and they came back, closed eight off the lows. So people want to own beans, but I'm not so sold on the fact that we're going to end up with as tight a stocks-to-use ratio as what the markets may be anticipating right now.
So I take it that your big concern, Chip, is that sales, particularly to China, may not necessarily mean ships, and those are two different things altogether.
Well, potentially, you know, it's like the one side, you know, what side of the mouth are we going to listen to? Because we're being talked to out of both sides of the mouth, right? On one side, we got the phase one trade deal, and they are buying a lot. That's undisputed. They're buying a lot of beans, a lot of corn. They bought some wheat. They're buying a massive amount of pork. That's a fact. But, you know, we have a massive increase in demand that's factored in. And on the other side of the mouth, you've got almost on a daily basis what seems like the U.S.-Chinese political relations taking a turn for the worse. So, and then you throw in the middle of that an election in November, and you know you have to be somebody far smarter than me to try to predict what that means. But that fear is there, and even if they follow through and ship those, that's a big increase in demand year over year. We may in fact hit it. But I think the bar is so high that it leaves the door open for disappointment if we don't ultimately hit that big increase in demand. And on top of that, if we have a record bean crop, pretty quickly, you know, instead of a 400 million bushel carryout, you're talking 600-700 million potentially. And that doesn't support $9 plus beans, in my opinion. So I think if anything, again, not to predict anything, my job necessarily isn't to predict, you know, our beans going to be at $10 or $8. I'm just pointing out the fact I don't know that the market has thought far enough ahead to think about what if we end up with a 650 or 700 million bushel carryout instead of 400. And that means to me there's a lot of potential downside risk. And, you know, as Joe mentioned and Merrill as well, we're under the cost of production. It's not like it's screaming at you to jump up and down and lock anything in here. But I do fear the potential, if anything, has, you know, major downside. I think it's beans relative to where corn and wheat are at. So, you know, I guess buyer beware in here at around $9 beans that the bull market's going to continue. Although the chart tells you are currently in an uptrend, as Joe pointed out.
Merrill Corelli, I probably should get your assessment of the bean market before we move on to our final words.
Well, I have to agree with Chip. You take a 52 bushel yield, and that's actually our record year yield we had back in 2016-17. And if that goes on to the ending stocks, you take your stocks to use from 9.8%, which is a tight situation, and you jump it up to 12%. And that would basically say that $8.50 to $9 beans would be a good place to sell. Now, if we were to drop back down to 9.8, you know, then you're talking something different. We are all concerned about U.S.-China relations, and all I can do is think back to the Cold War relations we had with Russia, and we still sold grain. As a matter of fact, we had one of the biggest, what they call the great grain robberies, when we were dealing in a Cold War with Russia. So I guess I don't see demand or China buying diminish too much more than what we're seeing right now. With their corn prices above $7, I think they're going to come back in the market and buy some more of our corn. I know they're also buying Ukrainian corn because it's cheaper. And that gets back to our U.S. dollar. It's nice that it's dropped, and it helps with several places. But our main competitors, and this goes for beans as well, because Brazil's a main competitor in beans, Argentina. But then you have Russia and the Ukraine. Competitors in the corn market or in the wheat market, their currencies have basically fallen with the U.S. dollar. Until we get that U.S. dollar lower than their currencies, it's going to be difficult to really increase our exports. On that vein, I think that we're getting real close to finding a low in the Brazilian real, and it's showing some signs of trying to rally. Well, that would be a big help not only to the beans, but the corn market as well. And I just wanted to point out real quick, our record corn crop, 176.4. So with our trend that they're using at 178.5, that already is a record crop.
Hey, Todd, let me add a little bit about Brazil. That currency is real important. You know, it devalued 30% by the time we was in, like, early May. It's now gotten stronger. It's like 5.14 right now. And the result is Brazil is going to be out of soybeans very quickly. In fact, Brazil is now importing soybeans from Paraguay. They've already imported about 400,000 tons. Crushers in southern Brazil can't find beans, so they're going to probably import more from Paraguay, maybe some from Argentina, maybe even a shipload or two from the United States. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But Brazil is going to be not much of a competition for soybean exports between now and January. And their currency is going to get stronger relative to the dollar, and that it is not good news for Brazilian farmers. So that currency is real important for Brazil, so I'm glad he brought that up.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Joe Vaclavic at Standard Grain.
I'm going to reiterate kind of something I said before. I think that the big crop story in corn in particular is going to very quickly be discounted into the marketplace, and we may even be getting to that point now. I'm a little bit more interested in whatever comes next, whether it be more Chinese demand, whether it be maybe the yields are not quite as good as what we thought, maybe it's ethanol, maybe it's currencies. I'm kind of interested to see what's next, and I really wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of contra-seasonal action in the corn market later this year because of how odd the first half of the year was.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
Well, I'd underscore what Joe said. I mean, as far as the risk being there, I think you do have to look for an early potential low. I don't know that the lows are quite in yet. I'm fearful of with big yields and any threat to demand on beans that, you know, we've got we're going to be ending up somewhere well under $9 and maybe challenge or break through those previous lows. Crop insurance is a huge part of this. I'm probably stealing some of Merrill's thunder, but if we do push down here over the next few weeks into mid to late August, first part of September in corn, due to what Joe has said about potential counter-seasonal type moves and digesting an early crop, big crop early, you got to look at, you know, protecting that some way. So there's still plenty of risk there. You got to have an all-encompassing plan, and it includes where your crop insurance guarantees are is a huge part of that plan this year.
Merrill Crowley from First Choice Commodities.
Chip made a good point about the risk in the beans, and I think you might want to look at some sort of put situation there to protect the downside. Beans can move very quickly in a large amount, which will offset your cost of your puts. If you're wrong, they can move very quickly back to the upside, and your puts can have helped you. So I think puts are probably a good thing with the beans. With the corn, I see you basically being protected with the crop insurance levels at this point.
And Michael Cordonnier from Soybean and Corn Advisor.
Well, I agree with everything you said so far about maybe an early seasonal low. Agronomically, the crops are on an upswing. We're ending July in very good note. Does not look very threatening in August, so I think most estimates will start to keep moving higher. And then the next year in South America, I think soybeans are primed to go up in production and area, and corn maybe not quite so much.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Joe Vaclavic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee, Merrill Crowley of First Choice Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, and Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor from Hinsdale, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.